for Dialogos Radio, the weekly radio program featuring the best in Greek music and culture, plus interviews with Greek and international newsmakers. Dialogos Radio with Michael Nevaralekis begins now. This is the Dialogos Radio, the weekly Greek radio program, which bridges the worldwide Greek community and which airs on 20 radio stations spanning 5 countries, 4 continents, and online. My name is Michael Nevaradakis, and today on our program, we will be featuring an interview on a topic that more than likely has not ever been covered previously by any other Greek radio program. Some of you who have been following the news may have heard the recent half-serious statements made by German Finance Minister Wolfgang Schäuble offering to trade Greece to the United States for Puerto Rico, the U.S. colony which is experiencing its own so-called debt crisis. You may have even seen headlines in the press calling Puerto Rico the Greece of the Caribbean. Today on the Dialogos interview series, we will feature an interview with Deborah Berman Santana, a recently retired professor of geography and ethnic studies at Mills College in Oakland, California, and a native of Puerto Rico who has been in Greece for the past month and who said and spoke with us about the historical origin of the current crisis in Puerto Rico, which is deeply rooted in the island's colonial status and history, while also discussing the many similarities which exist between the cases of Puerto Rico and Greece. This is an interview that you will not want to miss, and it is coming up right now here on the Dialogos Radio. The Dialogos Interview Series, our weekly segment featuring interviews on matters pertaining to Greece and the worldwide Greek community, coming up next here on Dialogos Radio. Joining us today on the Dialogos Radio and the Dialogos Interview Series is Deborah Berman Santana, recently retired professor of ethnic studies and geography at Mills College in Oakland, California, who will speak to us about what has been happening recently in Puerto Rico, economically and politically, any comparisons that have been made to the situation in Greece. Deborah, welcome to our program today.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
To get us started, Puerto Rico is, of course, not an independent or sovereign country, but a colonial territory of the United States. Share with us a brief history of the colonial exploitation, if you will, of Puerto Rico.
Well, Puerto Rico, along with Cuba, were the last of Spain's colonies in the Western Hemisphere, and were both on their way to independence. Puerto Rico had an autonomous situation, and on its way, and Cuba, of course, was winning a war against Spain when the United States intervened in the Spanish-American War in 1898. Cuba got a conditional independence, and Puerto Rico was outright given to the United States. It was a taken, you might say, war booty. And since then, the United States has done various strategies of exploitation of the natural and human resources of Puerto Rico. First with the sugarcane exploitation. Then when you get after World War II, actually the world's first third world development via export-led industrialization program known as Operation Bootstrap, which went through various phases and always depended on generous exemptions to foreign corporations, mostly U.S. corporations. In the 1990s, there was a transition to eliminate some of the special exemptions, which was completed in 2006. And of course, with the end of those exemptions, you have a lot of corporations packing up and leaving. And you see a tremendous expansion of big box corporations such as Walmart. Puerto Rico actually has more Walmarts per square inch than anywhere else in the world. And before that, it was the world capital in pharmaceuticals. And as we see, even with that, also beginning a real strong part of Puerto Rico's current economic crisis. And the latest method of exploitation is through the debt and public debt, and then the demands of the creditors, who are now mostly vulture funders, to basically impose the harshest austerity and privatization regime on Puerto Rico to keep squeezing the orange.
So, of course, that brings us to today, where we hear Puerto Rico referred to in the press as the Greece of the Caribbean, while Greece has also at times been referred to as the Puerto Rico of the Mediterranean. Many of these comparisons stem from this debt crisis in both Puerto Rico and Greece. Describe for us the so-called debt crisis in Puerto Rico as it is manifesting itself today, who is actually responsible for it, and what the people are being told about it.
Well, if you look at the media, you will say, well, it is the government has been spending beyond its means, has taken on much more debt than it can pay for, and the people of Puerto Rico are simply not industrious enough to make a big profit. And so that has sort of exacerbated the crisis that we have gotten very expensive first world tastes, but a third world pockets. And that it's all of our problems, and now we have to take some what they call bitter medicine, medicina amarga, like we say in Puerto Rico. But if you actually look at the crisis, you'll see that, first of all, it's a very small percentage of those in Puerto Rico who have benefited, mainly the local oligarchy and the big corporations, mostly from the United States. And behind all of this is always the United States, because Puerto Rico does not have any sovereignty. And that's a really important thing to keep in mind. So I would say if we did an audit, they would probably say that much of the debt is odious and or illegal. But I would say that regardless of how much of it is illegal, since we are a colony and we don't have sovereignty, the boss, the United States, is responsible to pay this debt.
Now, one of the ironies here is that when the United States took over colonial control of Puerto Rico after defeating the Spanish, it refused to take over the debt that had accumulated under Spanish colonial rule, if I'm not mistaken. Now, the United States, which has colonial control of Puerto Rico, is insisting that the people of Puerto Rico burden this new debt. Is this indeed the case?
Yes, it is. When, during the Treaty of Paris, when they were negotiating the terms of Spain and the takeover, Cuba was supposed to become independent, and the Spanish insisted, well, that the Cuban government had accumulated a tremendous amount of public debt. The United States argued that that had been accumulated under a colonial regime, and therefore it was odious debt, and should not be paid by Cuba. And in fact, it was not. And this is actually part of the basis for the whole idea of odious debt, unsustainable debt that we see the anti-debt world movements here. So it's very ironic that the United States basically helped Cuba to not have to pay for that debt with that argument, but there's not even a discussion of anything similar happening with its own colony, Puerto Rico.
We are speaking with retired professor of ethnic studies and geography, Deborah Berman Santana, here on Diálogos Radio in the Diálogos interview series. And Deborah, what has the official response to the so-called debt crisis been on the part of Puerto Rico's government and on the part of Washington? It seems rather similar to what has been happening in Greece, with technocrats coming in and with proposed new austerity measures.
Yes, well, the government of Puerto Rico, and we have two alternating colonial parties, one that basically says we can improve the current political status, and then the other party says, well, we need to become a state. Those are the two main parties. And this particular government has finally said that this is not sustainable and we need to find a way out of this. What's interesting is that the government in Washington, the federal government, basically says, well, we can help you with some technical assistance, but of course it's not our problem. And what they mean by technical assistance is they will basically tell Puerto Rico, the government, to contract certain experts from the United States to basically take care of this problem. Of course, this is with Puerto Rican people's tax monies that we're paying for these experts. And who are these experts? Just to give you an example, Puerto Rico is not an independent country, so of course we don't deal directly with the IMF, for example. However, one of the more important reports that has come recently, called the Kruger Report, and Freddy Krueger, we call her Freddy Krueger, but Ann Kruger, a former chief official of the IMF, And she is now working for her own and has other former IMFers that have been contracted by the government of Puerto Rico to put together a report. They were paid $500,000 to spend about 3 or 4 months in sunny Puerto Rico, basically interviewing some Puerto Rican economists who had done some work and taking a report from the New York Federal Reserve. And they came out with a wonderful, for their $500,000, 26-page report, which basically selectively cherry-picked some of the information, only looking at Puerto Rico's economic situation since 2000. And then, of course, their recommendations all come from the IMF playbook. And this is very, very similar. Every time Puerto Rico has to come up with some kind of report or think of some kind of way of resolving a situation or maybe working out a way to do some kind of negotiations with its creditors, who do they contract? Mostly North Americans, once in a while someone from somewhere else, but generally North Americans, when actually Puerto Rico does have economists, and in fact the government itself has economists that could also do this work. So it's actually a very lucrative for these top firms in New York, or for example, the judge who presided over the bankruptcy of Detroit has also been contracted by the government of Puerto Rico.
In addition to this 26-page report, which you mentioned, the Puerto Rican authorities have released their own fiscal adjustment plan recently, as they call it. This phrase should be familiar to anyone who has also been following the crisis in Greece. Would you say that these documents are indeed similar to the memorandum agreements that we've seen successive governments in Greece sign?
I have taken a look at the memorandums, and while there are certainly differences, I find a lot of striking similarities in the language, in speaking about the sustainability of the debt and about the issue of making Puerto Rico more competitive, for example, eliminating or reducing the minimum wage for younger workers to make them more competitive, of streamlining the bureaucracy and making Puerto Rico a more business-friendly or an investment-friendly environment, as if a colony isn't friendly enough. Such things as getting rid of the Christmas bonus for public employees, because somehow that's supposed to be a really terrible thing that's very wasteful, when the Christmas bonus, besides augmenting very poor pay, people will use that money to buy stuff for Christmas, and that actually helps the economy. Also, they're restructuring and also looking at privatization of the Electric Energy Authority, the Water and Sewers Authority, privatizing our highways, and one of the highways is already privatized, and guess who is running it? Is Goldman Sachs. And various other ideas for looking at public-private partnerships, when we actually spend way too much money on contracts rather than actually putting more investment in the public employees who actually do have the expertise to do the work that we need.
We are on the air with retired professor of geography and ethnic studies, Deborah Berman Santana, here on the Dialogos Radio and the Dialogos interview series. And Deborah, let's talk about the impact of so-called foreign investment in Puerto Rico. Puerto Rico has been the recipient, if you will, of a tremendous amount of foreign investment from the United States and elsewhere, with the likes of Walmart, which you mentioned before, and also companies like Walgreens having a heavy presence on the island, while Donald Trump and vulture capitalists seem to have passed through as well. What has been the impact of this so-called investment in Puerto Rico, and how has this also impacted local business and industry?
Yes, and I would like to talk for a minute about Walmart. Walmart, which is the world's biggest corporation, they have actually received subsidies and tax incentives in order to establish in Puerto Rico, far more than the local businesses do. And as is true elsewhere in the world where Walmart establishes itself, it tends to drive out local businesses. And instead of full-time businesses and full-time employment with circulation within Puerto Rico of our income and our spending, you now have these part-time workers with no benefits. And Walmart basically takes most of the profits outside of Puerto Rico and gives little to nothing as far as any type of tax investments or any kind of contribution to Puerto Rico. Once they will have some nice little publicity things. You go there during Christmas time, all of a sudden you'll be shopping in Walmart, and you see all of a sudden Puerto Ricans coming out in their typical dress and singing and dancing, and it's one thing we're known for is singing and dancing, and it's very entertaining. But if you get the idea that this is their contribution while they are bleeding us dry. I'll say a little bit about Donald Trump. Donald Trump has this reputation of being this billionaire who, if he is interested, he's going to bring in a lot of investment. Of course, he gets heavily recruited. He was going to do the Trump Estates, a big golf luxury resort. And he does it through his various businesses. And he didn't actually put his own money. He actually got a big loan from the Puerto Rico in Development Bank. And not only did he not build this luxury investment, but his that particular company went bankrupt, and Puerto Rico cannot collect on that money. So Donald Trump can go bankrupt and owe Puerto Rico money, but Puerto Rico does not have the right to go bankrupt.
Local businesses and companies in Puerto Rico also seem to have been impacted by the so-called cabotage rules being enforced by the United States, which create difficulties as far as the import and export of goods to and from Puerto Rico. Tell us about these rules and their impact.
Yes, these are incredibly important. This has really been since the early part of the 20th century that Puerto Rico is forbidden from having anything come into the country or go out of the country except on U.S. registered ships with U.S. crews. Now, if you know anything about the United States Merchant Marine, they are the most expensive, least efficient, most obsolete, and least competitive merchant marine on the planet. If we were able to do our business with anyone, Liberia, Greece, anybody, it would immediately lower our costs for everything. The reason that, and we have been lobbying for years to get this change, and this is actually a point of agreement among all of the political status persuasions in Puerto Rico. The United States Virgin Islands doesn't have this, but we do. And the reason that we have it, basically, is that U.S. Merchant Marine would probably disappear if it was not for Puerto Rico. Plus, the U.S. Navy says that those leaky ships are actually an auxiliary in times of national emergency, and they don't have to maintain them because Puerto Rico's maintaining them. And that is basically the reason that we had the cabotage laws.
Now, interestingly, and perhaps not coincidentally, it has been recently announced that there are likely significant oil and gas reserves off of the shores of Puerto Rico. We've heard of similar things in Greece as well. Is this indeed the case?
Well, it's interesting because we have gone through many years where Puerto Rico, the old doctrine was that Puerto Rico has absolutely no, quote-unquote, natural resources. And so because it is so bereft of natural resources, that means it cannot be independent, and we are so lucky that Uncle Sam wants us. Of course, any place had natural resources because there happen to be any facets of nature that human beings find profitable. And they wouldn't be there if there wasn't something there that they could make profit on. So you've gone from years where they would say that we have nothing to, well, we have perhaps some oil and gas resources, but they're too expensive to exploit. And now that you're getting to the time where the oil and gas reserves in the world that are available are the ones that used to be not cost effective to exploit, and now they've become cost effective. So now there is some interest in granting concessions. And of course, the United States controls all this. Puerto Rico doesn't have any control over this. This has been very quiet. You have to actually look for this information because you don't really see it in the media. But I've been following it for some years, and I know that there's definitely some interest. There is definitely interest in trying to connect all of the islands of the Caribbean with tubes and to generate energy in Puerto Rico more than we need to sell to the rest. And in fact, there is a project that Puerto Ricans are fighting against right now to build a giant incinerator, supposedly waste-to-energy incinerator, which would basically fill up Puerto Rico with toxic waste in order to generate energy to save. And actually, since we don't have enough garbage, they would actually be looking for to burning the garbage of other places. The person who is in charge of this actually had his start in Albany, New York, which is kind of interesting. And he's now living in luxury in the Virgin Islands.
Now, one thing that we hear a lot in Greece is that the country does not produce enough food and enough resources in order to sustain its population, that the country cannot survive without the European Union and without its membership in the Eurozone. And this sounds very similar to what you were just saying about Puerto Rico. Is this a narrative that is heard even about issues such as food production in Puerto Rico?
Absolutely. At the time that the U.S. actually invaded and occupied Puerto Rico at the turn of the 20th century, Puerto Rico was not only self-sustaining, but it was exporting to other islands as well. So you had a situation where nearly all arable land was taken over by sugar, and the production, local production of foods actually dropped dramatically, and instead the big corporations, for example, California rice, began to be imported into Puerto Rico to feed people, and also with the idea that we need to industrialize. Our water resources weren't that important. Our soils were not important, and we needed really to basically fill them all up with cement, industrialize, urbanize, and we could import all the foods we need. And what has happened in Puerto Rico is there has been created a preference for imported goods, and so to this day, somewhere between 70% to 80%. Of all the food in Puerto Rico that is consumed is actually imported. And it's not the good stuff. It is the eggs and the chicken that they can't get rid of in the United States that comes to Puerto Rico. Not coincidentally, you see the incidence of the diabetes and cancer and all kinds of hypertension, all kinds of gastrointestinal diseases have also increased. Despite all of this, Puerto Rico has incredibly fertile soils, has a terrific climate, has a very diverse climate, and we actually have abundant water. A drought that's happening, nonetheless, it's mainly an issue of distribution. We do have abundant water. We have over 200 rivers, thousands of creeks, and enough soil still that if we were able to turn our people back to growing what we need and to coming back to loving our own food, and Puerto Ricans do love our own food. We're very attached to our food, to our culture, to our music, but making that an object of preference and actually providing a distribution of products and make it more available to people so that they will buy our products and generate our own food and our own businesses.
We are speaking with the retired professor of ethnic studies and geography, Deborah Berman Santana, here on the Diálogos Radio and the Diálogos interview series. And Deborah, let's talk now about what the system of governance looks like in a colony. What is the political and electoral system like in Puerto Rico? What sort of representation does the island have or not have in Washington? And what is the mentality of voters in Puerto Rico toward their political parties?
Well, Puerto Rico has been defined by the U.S. Supreme Court as an unincorporated territory belonging to but not a part of the United States. In the early part of the 1950s, the United States promoted a cosmetic change in the government of Puerto Rico and defined it as a commonwealth, that's in English, or in Spanish, Estado Libre Asociado, an associated free state. And we say we're not associated, we're not free, and we're not a state. And that was meant to get Puerto Rico taken off the United Nations list of non-self-governing territories, because if you're on that list, the colonizer needs to report every year. And for the past 33 years, Puerto Rico has come before the Committee on Decolonization in the United Nations, and they have voted every single year to bring it before the General Assembly, and of course the United Nations has vetoed it every year. So what the government looks like is we have two houses. We have a governor, and we have voting every 4 years. We have also a non-voting resident commissioner who sits in committees in the House of Representatives in Washington, but does not have a vote. He does have a vote on committees and can speak, but he cannot vote on the floor. So that is our representation, which is less than what we had under Spain. We cannot do our own economic treaties. I mean, we do have different relations. We can do some economic things. But if there's ever any issue, the United States can step in and basically veto it. We have a huge apparatus called the Federal Building, the Edificio Federal, we also call the Colonial Building, which looks something like the U.S. Embassy here in Greece or in many other countries, only bigger. And we have the U.S. Federal Court, the Colonial Court, which is only in English. The judges right there at the moment are all Puerto Ricans, but you have to do everything in English there. And so this is actual circus. You go in there and they're all speaking in English. Even most Puerto Ricans do not speak English. We call it el difícil, the difficult one, because people don't want to speak it. But even if they speak English, when you're in the federal court proceedings, people will not speak English. They'll speak Spanish. So you have to have a translator. And many times a translator knows less English than the people in the audience. So this is a real carnival. At the same time, you also have the Puerto Rican courts, which are based on Roman law, just like all the Latin American and the Mediterranean countries, where, of course, the federal court is Anglo-Saxon law. And one will supersede the other. Give you an example. Puerto Rico does not have the right to declare bankruptcy, to go through Chapter 9, as do the states. So in order to try to deal with this debt crisis, the Puerto Rican government actually passed a law, sort of like a local, called the Criollo, our local Chapter 9, and the creditors basically sued in federal court and won. So we can't do that either. So I criticize, obviously, I have a lot of criticisms about our government. They're just as corrupt, and because the government doesn't have any sovereignty, but they do have the right to use budget to give to their friends, to give their contracts to their friends. And, you know, people in Greece will probably be very familiar with this. But they did actually make some effort to try to come up with some situation. And because of our status, because of our colonial status, so far we've not been successful in anything.
This is the Alois Radio. We will return after a short break.
Señor inversionista, tenga usted cuidado, en vez de su ganancia tendrá algo quemado. Señor capitalista, tenga usted cuidado, no tenga que cruzar el mar a nado, porque el pueblo borinqueño está pronto a despertar. En la víspera del pueblo que ya mismo va a gritar, a gritar. Tengan cuidado, señor hacendado, creyó que podía mantener al pueblo siempre de rodilla. El míster hacendado terminó comprado y a su nombre es algo olvidado. Porque el pueblo borinqueño está pronto a despertar en la víspera del pueblo que ya mismo va a gritar. A gritar, tenga cuidado, hombre de la política, ¿a qué crees que los votos te dan el derecho de robarle a otro? Mite el politiquero, métase a vaquero, un día lo ahorcarán con todo y sombrero. Porque el pueblo borinqueño está pronto a despertar en la víspera del pueblo que ya mismo va a gritar, tengan cuidado. Porque el pueblo borinqueño está pronto a despertar en la víspera del pueblo que ya mismo va a gritar, tengan cuidado.
We now return to the Diálogos interview series here on Diálogos Radio. We are speaking with retired professor of ethnic studies and geography, Deborah Berman Santana, here on the Diálogos Radio and the Diálogos interview series. An issue that seems to be a political hot potato in Puerto Rico is that of independence, similarly to how Grexit is a hot potato in Greece in recent years. How is the issue of independence viewed by the majority of the Puerto Rican people, and how do you view this issue?
The issue of independence has been criminalized in Puerto Rico. There has been tremendous repression. We have had many political prisoners. We have one at the moment named Oscar Lopez Rivera, who has been in prison for 34 years of a 75-year-old sentence for seditious conspiracy to overthrow the government of the United States in Puerto Rico. He has not been accused or convicted of any violent crime. And we are currently in a international campaign to pressure President Obama to free him. And we've had many others. There have been many violent deaths. There have been many forced exiles and a tremendous amount of fear of repression. Most people in Puerto Rico, and we've been taught basically that Puerto Rico does not have the capacity, neither the human capacity nor the natural resources capacity to be independent. And most people believe that. When you go to school in Puerto Rico, there used to be a geography book about Puerto Rico that you started getting, I believe it was the second grade, by a North American by the name of Muller. It said, Puerto Rico is a small island without natural resources and it's overpopulated, and so it cannot be independent and it needs to rely on the United States. This is the first thing you learn. So one of the things that I myself have had to basically decolonize myself, this has really been one of my own inspirations for going on to school and eventually become a professor. And it was the whole idea of why am I told that I'm less than everyone else? Why am I told that I have to depend on someone else? And it's a personal thing, but it's also a national issue. So at the moment, the independence people who openly support independence, and there's open and then there's hidden support for independence, is really small. We do have an independence party that gets maybe about 4 or 5% of the vote, maybe. It's had more in other times it's had less. Most pro-independence supporters do not actually support the party because there's a tremendous amount of division among Puerto Rican independence supporters. We're very, very fractured. When we unify, we actually can achieve some wonderful things, but we are incredibly divided for many, many reasons. Then there are other people who will vote for one or the other majority parties for some strategic reason to keep the other one out, or some people actually vote for the statehood party because they think that if Puerto Rico asks for statehood, of course the conference is going to say no. And then others will vote for the colonialist party who says, well, we can't vote for statehood under any circumstance and maybe we can get some autonomy. So it's back and forth. And then there are many people who refuse to vote because it is a colonial process. And I don't come from a political family. I come from a very poor family. And I personally believe that we really have no way out unless we can basically take some responsibility and have some power to decide our own future. Independence does not guarantee it by itself, but there is no way that you have the possibility of having enough sovereignty to make your own decisions without independence. To be independent, we could actually do some federation or join with the wonderful unifying collaborations that are happening in Latin America right now. We are a Latin American country. There's a saying in Latin America that the independence of Latin America is not complete without Puerto Rico. I believe that. I've spent a fair amount of time in Latin America. And the thing that has always impressed me is that we have been so isolated, so part of an iron curtain of colonialism, so affected by an embargo, at least as strong as that of Cuba's and less known, that we don't even know that we're not isolated. We don't even know that we have what we call a patria grande, patria, you know, a greater country. And that's Latin America. And I believe it's our destiny. I believe we won't survive unless we do it. And I believe also that if we can see our way to knowing that we do have the ability to rely on ourselves, I think it would happen very quickly. Because despite everything, Puerto Ricans, even those who say they support statehood, we are very strong in our national identity, our cultural identity. I'm sure here in Greece you saw what happened when in 2004 when the Puerto Rican Olympic team beat very badly the United States, and when Carlos Arroyo puffed out his shirt. I remember watching that. We have never forgotten that, and he is loved for that one moment. I understand in Greece you were all. I heard you all chanting Puerto Rico, and we are very grateful to Greece for that as well.
Now, having discussed all of this, how did you personally develop your own interest in Greece and in the Greek language, and what brought you to Greece at this time?
Well, it's interesting. I've had a lifelong interest and affinity with Greece. I grew up partly in New York, that's why I speak English well. And I live there and in Puerto Rico. I have some background in my father's grandfather's family in Ottoman areas, Constantinople and Palestine, and possibly in Crete as well. And I've always felt an affinity for the music, for the culture, for the food. And years ago, I actually spent some time in Greece. To be honest, it was the only part of Europe that I visited that I would care to visit again. I felt very close. I felt a lot of affinity. And I've always looked for ways to make that connection again. A few years ago, I began to get an opportunity to actually study Greece. I'm Greek, so I'm actually studying. I can't speak very well, but I can read and begin to understand. And also with the issue of the crisis happening in Greece and in Puerto Rico at the same time, I've been reading both and noticing how similar stories are. And thinking in my mind about how we can do things about not only protests and resistance, but also to promote solidarity and oral alternatives and perhaps do some exchanges.
We are on the air with retired professor of ethnic studies and geography, Deborah Berman Santana, here on the Alagos Radio and in the Alagos interview series. And Deborah, based on your own experience from back home in Puerto Rico and also having followed the developments in Greece, would you characterize Greece at this time as a sovereign country or one which more closely resembles a colony? And as a second part to this question, what do you believe the people of Greece should do to overcome this crisis?
Well, speaking, of course, as an outsider, but as an outsider with some similarities and some affinities, Greece, of course, is officially a sovereign country. We have all the trappings of a sovereign country. It reminds me very much of Latin America before the recent 20, 30 years, where you have those trappings of a sovereign country, but in terms of real governance, very colonial, an oligarchy, of course, that benefits from it and is only too happy to serve the interests of the outside powers. It seems to me that the membership in a unequal union, such as the European Union, and especially the Eurozone, where all members are not equal, has actually taken away more of Greece's sovereign ability to make its own decisions. For example, if you want to do things with your economy, say, devalue the currency, control more what comes in, what goes out, it's impossible to do it in the Eurozone. And I found very interesting this last, because the first time I was here, Greece was not part of the Eurozone. I found it very interesting to see the EU flag next to the Greek flag almost everywhere that I go. And all I could think of was in Puerto Rico, where we're in many cases forced to have the United States flag next to the Puerto Rican flag, and actually most Puerto Ricans won't do that, but in official ways, we call the U.S. flag La Pecosa, which means the freckly one. And I was looking at the EU flag and I was thinking, that's another Pecosa. And where would we be without her? That's a saying in Puerto Rico for the people who were pro-statehood. Not that they love the United States, but where would we be without her? And I find that so similar. And a number of the things that I've heard from Greeks who were talking about their fears of going back to the bad days of the drachma, which, I didn't think they were so bad when I was here, but of course I'm not from here, so I can't say. But I'm saying, so there's a part of me that says, what are you afraid of? And part of me, and even Puerto Ricans say, you know something, you at least have the trappings of sovereignty. You can actually take them and do them. We have much farther to go than you do. And I'm almost like saying, almost as a Puerto Rican, do it and give us hope that we can do it too.
Now, in closing, is there anything that you would like to say in Greek to our listeners?
Alelegi, apo to Puerto Rico. Ego, agapo, tiselada, niki, o thanatos.
Well, Deborah, ευχαριστώ πολύ. Thank you very much for taking the time to speak with us today on Dialogos Radio and for these very interesting insights as to what has been happening in Puerto Rico.
And I'll say in Puerto Rico, que vive Puerto Rico libre, que vive Grecia libre.
Attention iTunes users, Dialogos Radio is now just a click away. You can now download our podcasts and listen to Dialogos Radio 24/7 anytime, anywhere. Check us out today in the iTunes podcast directory and in iTunes Radio. We just wrapped up this week's edition of the Dialogos interview series here on Dialogos Radio, where we had the opportunity to speak in detail with retired professor Deborah Berman Santana, formerly of Mills College in Oakland, California, about the so-called debt crisis in Puerto Rico and its many similarities with the situation in Greece. As with all of our interviews, we'll have the podcast of this interview available soon on our website, dialogosmedia.org, in our Android, Kindle, BlackBerry, and Chrome apps, in iTunes, TuneIn.com, and the Windows Store, and in Anobex Radio, WeCast, Player FM, and Stitcher apps. During the intermission between the two parts of the interview that we heard, we had the opportunity to also hear some music from Puerto Rico, music with a political message. And the artist that we heard was named Roy Brown Ramirez, a major voice in favor of Puerto Rican independence, and the name of the track that we heard was Señor Inversionista, or Mr. Investor, from his 1970 album Yo Protesto, or I Protest. And what's significant about this album, aside from the political message that it delivers, is its Greek connection. In 1970, during the era of the military junta in Greece, a visitor to Greece from Puerto Rico brought over a bootleg cassette recording of this album, which then began to be copied underground from one activist to another in Athens, and some of these activists were in hiding at that time from the junta. So with that, we'll continue our musical journey, moving from the Caribbean to the south of Greece and to the island of Crete, where during the same time period, Nikos Xylouris was arising as a voice of freedom for the people of Greece. We'll hear one of his classics, Apto Chaniotti Porta, right now here on Dialogos Radio, and that will be followed up by our commentary of the week.
Στρατώνατα, Όπως τα φόρια πρώτα που το χάνιω την πόρτα. Που το χάνιω την πόρτα.
Take the Alagos Radio on the go with you with the new The Alagos Radio app for Android devices. Now you can listen live to The Alagos Radio and The Alagos Radio 24/7, download our podcasts, and read our latest articles all in our free Android app, available now in the Google Play Store. Coming up next here on The Alagos Radio is our commentary of the week. The Alagos Radio's Commentary of the Week. Each week, Michael Navradagis provides views and opinions on issues pertaining to Greece and to the worldwide Greek community. Coming up next, here on The Alagos Radio. Today on our broadcast, we had the opportunity to feature an interview with someone who, according to a so-called journalist at a fairly well-known Greek online news outlet, does not exist. Deborah Berman Santana, the retired professor whom we heard earlier, apparently is not a real person, but a figment of my imagination, someone who I created to make it seem like the Alagos Radio has a larger following on the internet. This from a journalist who has had articles about Greece featured on the front page of the New York Times. Just so you have an idea of the quality of journalists who are doing reporting from Greece. In any event, those of you who did hear our interview today with Deborah Berman Santana can clearly tell that she is, in fact, a real person. And those of you who have been following our broadcasts all this time surely know that this is a real radio program, one that differs quite significantly from most of the corrupt media outlets based in Greece and the Greek diaspora. I don't think it would be too much of an exaggeration to state that few, if any, Greek radio programs have ever featured an interview on the topic that we cover today about Puerto Rico, a land which has been colonized for over 500 years, and which today is experiencing an economic crisis which, unlike Deborah Berman Santana, is fake, a creation of Puerto Rico's colonial masters, the United States of America, who are now sending the bill for this crisis to the occupied peoples of this island nation. Why should we care about this, though? This is a radio program about Greece, not Puerto Rico, right? And yet, what is happening in Puerto Rico and in many other countries just like Puerto Rico concerns us all. It concerns us because there are tremendous similarities in terms of the political and economic aspects of the so-called crisis that is being experienced in both Greece and Puerto Rico, and in terms of what the political response to these crises has been. Even more so, it concerns us because it demonstrates something which many in Greece and the Greek community easily forget, that the crisis in Greece is not because Greeks are lazy, uncompetitive, spendthrift, ouzo-drinking losers who don't produce anything except maybe feta and olives. We are talking about a global phenomenon, artificial crises which are created by specific global powers and decision-makers and institutions, which then create the conditions in which harsh, anti-democratic austerity measures are then imposed. And these measures that are enforced just so happen to be exactly the same everywhere. In Greece, in Puerto Rico, in Argentina prior to 2001, and in Spain, Portugal, Cyprus, Ireland, and Italy today. Indeed, the similarities are quite striking between the two nations. Puerto Rico, for instance, does not have the right to make economic agreements with other countries without Washington's approval. The same is true in the case of Greece, thanks to its membership in a European Union and European Common Market. The people of Puerto Rico have been terrorized into believing that if they advocate for their independence, that all sorts of horrors and disasters will follow, that they will not be able to survive as an independent country. The same exact thing is said about Greece, and what will supposedly happen if the country leaves the European Union and the Eurozone. Puerto Rico has been a location of numerous American bases and military activities, and such is the case with Greece as well, with the current supposedly progressive leftist government now considering a proposal to allow a U.S. drone base to operate in a country. In Puerto Rico, the people are told that the island does not produce anything, that they are lazy and unproductive and uncompetitive, and the exact same things have been said about Greece, both by the supposedly civilized allies of Greece in Europe, and also by numerous self-hating Greeks. In Puerto Rico, children are not taught the island's history in their schools, and the same is now happening in Greece, where school children are taught that they are European first and then Greek, a statement which was also uttered by the supposedly heroic former Finance Minister Yanis Varoufakis. In Puerto Rico, vulture funds have come in and purchased a substantial portion of the colonial debt, and something very similar has happened in Greece as well. In Puerto Rico, a higher tax rate on private tutoring services was initially proposed, just like in Greece recently, and in both cases, the tax was then temporarily withdrawn to make it seem like their respective governments are responsive to the people's concerns. There is a huge brain drain of young and educated graduates leaving Puerto Rico, and the same exact phenomenon is taking place these past several years in Greece and has happened many times in the past as well. In Puerto Rico, the people have been conditioned to a large extent to prefer imported products, and the same thing has happened in Greece as well, as the so-called Western way of life has come into a country where self-loathing is an eternal trait. In Puerto Rico, there have been cuts to wages, to social services, to education, with many schools having been shut down. There have been numerous privatizations, while new so-called structural adjustment proposals are calling for the elimination of the minimum wage for young people, even higher taxes, and more privatizations. The same exact measures, in other words, that have been enforced and are still being enforced in Greece. And just for the record, these similarities don't just exist between Greece and Puerto Rico. The same exact policies have been enforced in Argentina, in Brazil, in Bolivia, in Venezuela, in Mexico, in Indonesia, in South Korea, in Egypt, in Moldova, in Ukraine today under the country's US, NATO, and EU-supported neo-Nazi government, in Romania, in Chile under the Pinochet dictatorship, in Zaire, and in numerous other countries that have fallen victim to the so-called assistance provided to them by the International Monetary Fund, the same IMF which the Greek government and the supposedly heroic Yanis Varoufakis consider the good cop and a friend and ally of Greece. In the meantime, the government of Hope and Change, which was recently re-elected in Greece, is now set to raise taxes some more, to force the self-employed to pay 100% of their income tax in advance, and is moving forward with the privatization of 14 airports for the next 50 years in exchange for 2.1 billion euros, even though just last year alone, these airports made 447 million euros in profit. This same faux leftist government will permit foreclosures of primary residences with without a hearing, is raising taxes and reducing tax breaks for farmers instead of promoting the country's agricultural sector, will further reduce the heating oil subsidy, even though over 80% of the country's households have already been forced to go without heating oil due to previous reductions in the subsidy, while the government is obliged to pass a slate of 48 new austerity measures by October 15th. And in the near future, the passage of the Transatlantic Trade and Investment Partnership, the European counterpart to the Trans-Pacific Partnership, which the U.S. version of Hope and Change, Barack Obama, recently agreed to, will become a reality in Europe, giving multinational corporations unprecedented powers over sovereign countries and supranational bodies, while adding millions of additional people to the ranks of the unemployed. Ah, but I forgot. Syriza's member of parliament, Yorgos Varamenos, recently stated that there are no unemployed persons, but rather people who are economically inactive. I can't wait to see Greece's economically inactive go and vote for Syriza for a third time in a few months when elections will likely be held again. All of these policies are being rammed through in the name of Greece remaining in the Eurozone and retaining the so-called European Dream, to remain in the same European Union which is contributing to the ongoing carnage in the Middle East and which also has blood on its hands through the economic and political destruction of Greece. And I have to say I am personally ashamed. Ashamed of the current state of Greece, ashamed of a significant percentage of the Greek people, and especially the young people, those of my generation who consider themselves European and not Greek, who leave Greece and hide the fact that they are even Greek, who are completely apolitical and indifferent, and all of this with the blessings of their parents, who really have no clue what is happening outside their country's borders, but think they do because they follow the trashy, pro-austerity media outlets of Greece, and then run out and vote, again, for those same politicians which are piece by piece dismantling the country, voting for them in exchange perhaps for a favor of some kind, instead of opening their eyes to what is happening in Greece and the world, and realizing which powers are in fact, the ones who are in control. Follow Diálogos Radio on Facebook and Twitter and remain connected to all our latest news and updates. Check us out today at facebook.com/Diálogos Media and at twitter.com/Diálogos Media. Adriana Babali and Stamos Samsis with Periplanomeno here on Diálogos Radio, where right before that we heard our Commentary of the Week segment. Today's edition of Diálogos Radio is just about ready to come to a close, but we will be back on the air again next week, same time, same place, featuring an interview with aviation industry analyst and expert Bill Kalivas, who will talk to us about Greek tourism, trends in the aviation industry, and his online initiative to bring more nonstop service from the United States to Greece. In the meantime, be sure to stop by our website, dialogosmedia.org, where you can find our podcasts, our on-demand programming, our past playlists, listen to our online radio station, Dialogos Radio 24/7, and read our most recent published interview with political analyst Dimitri Laskaris, which was featured earlier this week in Truth Out. All of that and more can be found on our website, dialogosmedia.org. We will wrap up our broadcast today with Calliope Veta and Nicola Piovanni singing "I Zoi Ine Orea." For Diálogos Radio, this is Michael Nevradakis. Thank you for joining us.
Δες πιο πέρα για το φως. Δες, δεν είσαι μοναχός. Δες πιο πέρα κι απ' τον πόνο, τη νύχτα που περνά σαν γέλιο μάνας, μάνας που γεννά. Δες στου χρόνου τη φωτιά. Δες πως άντεξε η καρδιά. Ξάφνιασμα της λύπης σα χαίρεται η ψυχή και βγαίνει βόλτα, βόλτα στη βροχή. αρχίσαμε μην κλαις και πιάσε πάλι στο χώρο. Δες με την πάθος τραγουδώ, όσο πιο ψηλά πετώ, μου φτάνει